You are listening to the podcast of Providence Church in Austin, Texas. We hope this message raises your affections for Jesus and helps you live out the gospel in everyday life.
If you were to ask a fish, how's the water today? I think a fish's response would be, what's water? You know, because, I mean, that's all they've ever known. It's their atmosphere. It's their surrounding. It's like asking us, how's the oxygen today? We have no idea how to answer that question. I guess it's fine. I mean, I'm just breathing it. It's the air I breathe, literally. It's the atmosphere I live in. James, I think, in this little passage that was just read today, is going to try to show us something that is as much a part of the air that we breathe. It surrounds us in such a way that we don't even notice it. It affects every one of us, but we're not even aware of it most of the time. And yet James is going to say that it's sin. He's going to refer to it as a sin of omission, right? Something we neglect or leave out. We tend to think of sin as acts of commission, things that we do. But James is going to say, no, this is something you neglect, that you leave out in your life, and you don't even notice it, because it's all around you. To help us think about it, I want you to picture something visually here. I want you to imagine that this speaker here on your left side is point A, and that speaker over there is point B. Okay. Now, one way to look at life, our life, is just that it's a series of lots of point A's to point B's, lots of little journeys in the one big journey of our life. And so in many ways, our life is directional. It's going somewhere. We're always doing things. We're making decisions. We're headed somewhere. We're making plans, right? And we make plans in very, you know, formal ways, conscious ways. We make plans in very informal ways, very subconsciously. And so point A to point B could represent a period of time. You know, I'll be in church today from 4 o'clock to 5:30. It could represent a geographical distance. Tomorrow, I'm going to Austin, from Austin to Dallas, for a meeting. It could represent ambitions, goals, plans. After I finish my undergrad degree, I'm going to law school, right? Point A to point B. It's all real normal, isn't it? I mean, it's just how we do life. We could say it's just being proactive, just making plans, living life. Here's the problem. We tend to presume that all it takes to get from point A to point B in life is our will, our decision, our choice, our abilities. Many of you know this, but on April 15th, I was at point A. It was 2:43 p.m., and I was on this street corner, point A. And over the next 6 minutes, I was going to walk to the next street corner, which is point B. It was a beautiful day. I was taking my time. I was in no hurry at all. I was just soaking up this atmosphere, just thousands, literally, of people around me, cheering, laughing, festivity, pulling for each other. And I was just like, this is awesome, right? And I'm just taking my time. And I'd stopped a few times and kind of watched what was going on. I was just meandering that way on my own timetable. Somewhere between point A and point B in that six-minute walk, I passed by a bomb, the bomb that you guys had seen explode many times on television. Might have passed by the guy that dropped the bomb right there. At 2:49, I got to this street corner at point B, and I took a left. And seconds later, that bomb exploded. Here's the deal. Between point A and point B, I did not think about God one time. And I'm like a pastor, right? Like a Mr. Christian guy, right? I believe that God is with us. I believe that God is guiding us. I believe that he's sovereign. I didn't think about him one time between point A and point B. Because I can walk from one street corner to the next on my own, can't I? And there it is. There's the sin that's so normal. It's the sin of presumption. Taking life for granted, taking God for granted, making our plans, doing our stuff, not even thinking about God, actually living life as if he doesn't even exist, as if he's not even there. Last week, James confronted us with the sin of judgmentalism. That's when we set ourselves above others and above the law of God, and as if we are the master of others and the master and the arbiter of God's law, right? Today, he's going to challenge us with the sin of presumption, and that's when we set ourselves up as the master of our own lives. Now, both judgmentalism and presumption are arrogant sins. They're arrogant because they assume the place of God, and yet they're so normal, we don't even notice we're doing either of them. It's just part of the air we breathe. I want to take a moment in the next few minutes, and I want to look at what James says about this sin of presumption. I want to look first at the sin, and then second, I want to look at what I think he offers as sort of a solution to this sin, okay? So let's look at James 4. Let's look at verse 13 for a second. James 4, at the sin of presumption. I want to dissect a little bit about what James is saying here. James 4, verse 13. Come now, you who say today or tomorrow, we will go from point A to point B, we'll go into such and such a town and spend a year there, and we'll trade, and we'll make a profit. Now, this is a hypothetical statement, and it represents the attitude that I think James wants to address. And I think it's not something that we would say out loud. We probably wouldn't say that necessarily to anyone. I think what James is addressing here is sort of self-confident self-talk, self-confident planning that just kind of says, I'll do my thing. And it's very normal, isn't it? I mean, it almost feels proactive. You know, tomorrow, you know, it's in my calendar. I'm going to do this. I'm going to go to this town and do my job. The statement is riddled with presumption, though. I want to say that this statement presumes that we are the master of everything that happens between point A and point B. This statement presumes that we are the master over life itself. Look what he says. He says, today or tomorrow, we're going to do this, and then we're going to spend a year there. That's presumption that my heart is going to be beating tomorrow. That's presumption that in a year from now, I'm still going to be alive doing this or that, isn't it? It's saying I'm master over when of time. I mean, I'm the one in control of when I'm going to die or not. The statement is presumptuous in that it presumes that we are master over our own choices. Look what he says. He says, today or tomorrow, we're going to go to that town, we're going to spend a year there, and we're going to do business. So we get to decide when we're going, we get to decide where we're going, for how long we're going, and what we're going to do when we get there. Like, we simply make the decision about all of those things, and it will be so. The statement presumes that we're master over our own abilities. We're going to go, and you know what we're going to do when we get there? We're going to trade, and we're going to make a profit. I mean, of course we're going to make money. We're us. Right? We have the ability. We're capable. We can do it. No way we're taking a loss here. We're winners. It presumes a mastery over the outcome. Now, I want to make an observation about this statement. I think James is writing here primarily to the affluent in the churches that he's writing to, right? Those that are able to go to another town and do business for a year, okay? Why I think that has something to say to us is because relative to most of the world, relative to most of the people in human history, we are the affluent. We are the ones with means, aren't we? And affluence has a way of affording a measure of control as to how we organize our schedule, how we spend our time, where we spend our time. Affluence has this, I think, subtle way of convincing us that we call the shots in life, that we determine the outcome of everything. So, little example. I carry around, and you carry around in your pocket today, more computing power than they had on some of the early space missions, right? And I don't know if that's actually true, but I just like saying that for effect, okay? I like to think my iPhone is better than what they had on Apollo 11, okay? So, what's the joke that I've seen? Yeah, but on Apollo 11, they used their computer to go to the moon, and you just play Angry Birds on your computer. So, I walk around in many ways with the world at my fingertips. Whatever I need to know is right here. And this is command central for my life and schedule. So if I'm going to have lunch with you tomorrow, I just put it in here, and it's in the cloud, and It's on my laptop. I can even send it to your devices, right? And so once I do that, it shall be so, right? We shall eat lunch tomorrow, right? And so it's no wonder that I think I'm in control of my schedule. My affluent way of life has convinced me that I am. Here's James's commentary on this little presumptuous statement. Look at verses 16 and 17. As it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. So whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him, it is sin. When we tell ourselves that we're going to go to someplace and do for this amount of time and do this and that, James says it's arrogant. He says it's evil, and his conclusion is it's sin. Now, what about it is sinful? Surely he's not saying it's sinful to make plans, right? Actually, the Bible has a lot of great things to say about the wisdom of planning. I think planning is actually a God-given inclination. God has a plan. Right? And so those of us created in his image are certainly planners to some degree. What is it that's sinful here? I think what James is saying about the statement in verse 13 is that it is planning with no reference whatsoever to God. He says in verse 16, you boast in your arrogance. It's not sinful necessarily to boast. It just means to glory in something. You can glory in good things and right things. But he says, you glory in your arrogance. You boast in your own power. You glory in your own resources. You glory in self-determination. And he says, that's sin. It's evil. And I think in verse 17, he's saying this. Hey, you guys are Christians. You know that God is with you. You know that he's in control of all things. And when you leave him out of your plans, when you omit him, when you neglect him, when you forget him in the making of your plans, it's sin. So it's possible for us as Christians to live our lives, to go from point A to point B, or all the point A's to point B's in our life, like God doesn't exist. We live like functional deists, right? A deist is someone who believes in God. God created the world. He got it going, and then he pulled back, and he's not involved anymore. And so it's up to us to set the direction of life. Now, as Christians, we don't believe that, but we can functionally live like that. It is almost normal to forget God. A few years ago, I forgot my mom's birthday. And how am I doing? You know, I didn't remember till the next day. And I called my mom, like, Mom, sorry, happy birthday yesterday. And I'm like, how terrible is that, right? I mean, this is the woman who carried me for 9 months. She gave birth to me. She fed me. She disciplined me. She paid for my college. She loved me through all of my attitudes throughout the years, and I just forgot her birthday, right? How terrible is it to forget someone so important in your life? Nobody wants to be forgotten or ignored or neglected. That's like the worst thing, right? To be forgotten, especially by somebody you love. When we forget God in our daily lives, we are forgetting the most important person in our lives. We're taking him for granted. It is the sin of presumption. And we just say, hey, God, we got this. We got it. We're in control. Now, we do this in all kinds of ways between point A and point B, ways that feel really normal. So we say things like this. Yeah, we're going to get married and then we're going to wait a few years before we have kids. Right? Oh, really? Okay. And then you're just going to get some kids. Right? So you're in control of that miraculous thing called conception and then the 9 months in between and then the birth of a healthy. You're just going to get some of those? Well, unless you can't have kids, right? We say, well, I'm going to be in grad school for 3 years, then I'm going to move to New York City and I'm going to be working there. Okay. Like 3 years from now? Maybe God is calling you, you know, to Waxahachie or somewhere else that's not as glorious is New York City. I don't know. You don't know. I'm going to get settled financially, get things in order, maybe buy a house before I get married. Okay? You just get all that organized, and then you're going to go get a wife, right? I plan on working here a couple of years just to get some experience, then I'm going to do something else. Have you asked God what it is he wants you to do with your life? We do it all the time. We live presumptuously. You know what that produces in us? It produces anxiety. Because if I'm the one that's in control of my plans, then I'm the one responsible for making sure they all work out. And that is a heavy burden. That is a God-type burden to bear. Anxiety assumes the place of God because it assumes I'm in control. When we live presumptuously, it produces in us also a sense of entitlement. We think, well, I deserve this. You know, I'm doing the right things. I'm living the right way between point A and B. So I should get there and it should work out. And I should be happy and blessed. And man, that's a setup for disappointment, right? That is an arrogant way to live because presumption assumes the place of God. If I do it a certain way, it'll work out. And yet God is the giver of all good gifts, okay? But we do it all the time. So if presumption is so normal, if it's so ingrained in us, how do we approach life differently? What is the solution? I think James points us in a direction here. Look back at James 4. Let's look at the solution for a moment. We're going to look at verse 14 and 15 in between here. Actually, let me read verse 13 again, and then I'll read 14 and 15. Come now, you who say today or tomorrow, we will go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make a profit. Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you're a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. What James is calling for here is humility. But more than that, I think he's calling for conscious humility, meaning mindful humility, humility that is self-aware, right? Deliberate humility. Now, the word humility is derived from the Latin word humus, which just means earth, dirt, soil, right? It's the same word we get the word human from. That's because human beings are taken out of the earth. Genesis chapter 2, verse 7. Then the Lord God formed the man of dust from the ground, and he breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and the man became a living creature. That verse alone ought to produce humility in us, a groundedness, so to speak, shouldn't it? So to be humble doesn't mean I see myself as dirt, but it does mean I see myself as dependent. To be humble means I have an accurate view of myself. Actually, when we're living in humility, we're being the most true to ourselves that we could possibly be. Humility has a keen awareness of where I've come from and who gives me life, who animates me. Because what can animate dust? Only the Spirit of God, right? So there's three areas of humility that I think James calls to our attention here. One is humility as it relates to knowledge. Look what he says in verse 14. He says, yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. You do not know. That's what he wants us to know. You do not know about like the next, you know, let's not talk about the next 365 days, he's saying. I need you to admit that the next 24 hours are a mystery to you. You do not know. You do not know. Have you come to grips with, have you acknowledged your limited knowledge as it relates to life? You and I are not omniscient. That belongs to God alone. He also calls us to humility as it relates to existence, as it relates to life itself. Look what he says in verse 14. He says, what is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. In other words, you're temporary. You and I are fragile. We're like a mist. Now, Friday morning, you may remember there was fog in Austin. I was driving Lauren, my daughter, to school, and we couldn't see like more than 100 yards in front of us. And she was like, I don't know how you drive in this. And I was like, yeah, because I'm an expert driver, you know. And I was like, you know, this would be gone in a couple hours. This would be gone before lunch. And I knew that because I know what fog is. It's temporary. It's fleeting. Poof. It's gone. And James is saying, that's what your life is like. You are not you're not self-existent, meaning you're not the source of your own life. That's reserved for God alone. And then he calls for humility as it relates to control. Look at verse 15. He said, instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. If the Lord wills, it's the phrase Deo Volente, if God wills, we will live and do this or that. Now, here's what James is not saying. He's not saying, I want you to take everything you say and put a really Christian-y slogan on the end of it, right? Like, hey guys, I'm going down, I'm going to go get some lunch, God willing, right? That is not what James is saying here. Please do not do that. That is annoying, okay? And worse yet, it's probably just a form of Christian superstition, right? Like, if I say it the right way and I just cover myself, you know, Lord willing, right? It's not what James is saying. I think what James is saying here is you need to acknowledge who is in control of all things, right? What's interesting is the outcome in verse 15, of the statement in verse 15, is the same as the outcome of the statement in verse 13. What does he say? If the Lord wills, we will live. We will live and do this and that. Outcome's the same. He wants us to acknowledge that the one who causes the outcome is God. It's his will, not ours. You and I are not sovereign. That is reserved for God alone. The solution for presumption, I think, is conscious humility, remembering who we are and remembering who God is. And it's so easy to get that mixed up. It's so easy to get mixed up because we assume that we are oftentimes the omniscient, self-existent, sovereign master of our own plans in the direction of our life. And we don't do that consciously. It's just the air we breathe. It's just kind of how we're used to doing life. And so, God, I'll see you at church. God, I'll see you in my morning devotionals. I might see you at Gospel Community this week. But other than that, I got it. From Saturday to Monday, I got it. Pretty much, God. And we don't say that consciously, but it's just who we are, and it's what we're used to. And when we do this, we're forgetting God, we're being presumptuous that he's with us and he's in control. Now, I want to get real practical here at the end. If it is normal to forget God in our daily lives, how can we remember him more? Okay? How is it that we can be more aware of his presence as we make our plans? Now, this is what I think this is part of the answer. I think part of the answer is we got to change our self-talk, okay? Instead of telling ourselves that we're going to do this and that, and we're going to be there that long, and this is how things are going to go, instead of telling ourselves that, we need to talk to God very purposefully about everything that we're doing. On purpose, intentionally reminding ourselves that God is with us, that he's leading us, that he's in control between point A and point B. Because all of life is a result of his grace, isn't it? Like, the fact that I'm standing up here right now with my heart beating, with extremities that I can feel, that are functional, with a mind that is functional. Most of the time, it's functional, right? It's God's grace. I have no control over those things. I have to practice reminding myself of that. I have to practice the self-talk that says, no, this is all of life is God's grace toward me. Changing my self-talk. This week, I rediscovered an old classic book that you may have heard of. It's called The Practice of the Presence of God. It's by Brother Lawrence. It's a tiny little book, and I rediscovered it, reread it this week. Brother Lawrence, he lived in the 1700s, or the 17th century in France, and he made it his purpose in life to, on purpose, practice the presence of God and be aware that God is with him and to talk to him throughout the day. It's a great book. You can pick it up on Amazon for like $3. It's a great read. But I want you to hear some of the things he says about this. He says, to be with God, we must cultivate the holy habit of thinking of him often. We have to know someone before we can truly love them. In order to know God, we must think about him often. He says, the most holy and necessary practice in our spiritual life is the presence of God. That means finding constant pleasure in his divine company. Speaking with him in all seasons, at every moment, without limiting conversation in any way. And he says, try to converse with God in little ways, not in memorized prayer. And he says, offer short phrases such as, Lord, I belong to you. Or, God, I love you with all my heart. Or, Lord, use me according to your will in this situation. Talk to him in your ordinary work, during meals, during any daily duty. Do you see what he's saying? He's saying just in very small ways, cultivate the habit of talking to God throughout the day and acknowledging that he's with you. Now, let me give you a little example of this. Y'all know my wife is a runner. That's why we're in Boston. She ran the marathon a couple weeks ago. A few years ago, she was having some foot problems, and so she had to stop running because she couldn't do it anymore. And so she was out of running for probably, I think it's 3 or 4 months. And she got everything worked out, and she was healthy again, and she was going to get back into running. And she realized, I don't take this for granted anymore because maybe I can't run. And so she started the practice of when she would be driving down to Town Lake every day, she would just say, God, can I run today? Can I run today? And whenever God said yes, which was most days, she loved her run and she praised him and she thanked him for it. Now, here's the deal. She kept up that practice even to today. And so instead of assuming she can run, she asked, God, can I run today? She asked it on April 15th in Boston, God, can I run today? And God said yes. The practice of asking God instead of assuming eventually became a habit in her life, which eventually became a joy in her life. And now she just loves to talk to God during the run, before the run. Isn't that interesting? Practice becomes a habit, becomes a joy. We have some other friends that talk to God very intentionally about any time they're going to make a purchase, just financial stuff in their life. So they'll be like, God, should we buy this couch? Should we look elsewhere? Or should we hold off right now? What should we do? I'm so challenged by that. Because it's not real spiritual. It's just real simple, right? There's nothing complicated about it. It's just acknowledging, God, our stuff belongs to you. What do you want us to do with it? Practicing the presence of God. This is not normal for most of us. It's not normal for me to talk to God throughout the day. It's not natural for most of us. That's why I like this concept of practicing the presence of God, because practice involves time, effort, attention. It even involves failure. The natural tendency we have is to run headlong off into our plans under our own efforts and our own wisdom, right? And he's just saying, talk to God about it as you go and practice that. Whatever we practice will eventually become a habit and it'll become a joy. I've actually been trying it this week, and it's been really great, actually. I've just more consciously been trying to, just in little, as you know, I'm driving across town, I'm trying to talk to God more. You know what it's producing? Thankfulness, perspective, and I think it's producing humility, because I begin to see my life as belonging to him. Okay? Practice it. Now, I can walk from one street corner to the next on my own, can I, right? Well, only by the grace of God can I do that, and can you do that? In fact, a lot of times it's not the Lord's will that I would arrive at point B. A lot of time it's not the Lord's will that I would arrive at happiness or comfort or ease or success. The Lord's will for me is that I would know him. And a lot of that unfolds in the journey between point A and point B. So he is the God of the in-between, and he's with us every step of the way. All of life is a result of grace. Now, here's the good news. Here's the gospel. We can know for sure, that God is with us every step of the way, everywhere we go. And the reason we can is because Jesus Christ has already accomplished for us all the things that James is calling us to in this passage. Humility, seeking the will of God, practicing the presence of God, right? Jesus, the Son of God, who had no reason to be humble at all because he knows everything, he's self-existent, he's sovereign, he's the sovereign king, he humbled himself by becoming a man and dying on the cross. Jesus, the one who perfectly knows the will of the Father, he spent his whole life seeking the will of the Father and submitting himself to him. He wasn't living recklessly, autonomously, even in the garden before he was arrested and he knew he was going to die the next day. He said, not my will, but your will be done, Father, right? Jesus, who was the only human that's ever lived that's been in perfect communion with God, because he is God, constantly talked to the Father. He constantly practiced the presence of God. When we trust in Jesus by faith, we come into union with him. The Bible describes the Christian life as being in Christ. That means we are in Christ, he is in us. So wherever you and I walk around as a Christian, the one who knows everything, who's omniscient, the one who is invincible because he's already defeated death in his resurrection, and the one who is sovereign because he is the King of Kings. He walks around with us. That's so comforting. Isn't that awesome? We can talk to him whenever we want. We can say, Lord, not what I will, but is it your will that I would do this today? We don't have to live presumptuously anymore because he's walking around with us. We can practice the presence of God because he's actually there. We have living communion with him, and we can enjoy it. Let's thank him.
Thanks for listening to the podcast of Providence Church. For more resources and info, visit us online at www.providenceaustin.com.